You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Good morning and welcome to Matinair on Air. Jane Matinair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Butenoff coming to you live from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text. The number is the same, 855-752-4842. You can leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Before we get to our next guest, just a reminder that Civic Media is more than just news talk. Mm-hmm. We are music as well. We have all kinds of music stations. You can listen to the best of the 80s, 90s, and more on 105.7 WCFW in Eau Claire, 99.7 Max FM in Baraboo, and of course, and they're so good, Real Oldies on WRJN in Racine. That's 1400 AM. So download the Civic Media app. Take us with you wherever you go. You can listen to the news talk. You can listen to wonderful music. Download the Civic Media app today. It is absolutely free. He is back. It's been a while. David Drake is a wildlife specialist with the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. So glad to have you back, David. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, Jane. Thanks so much for the invite. Always happy to be back on your show.
It's so much fun. In the last half hour of the show, David, now we call it Audio Sorbet, where we try to lighten things up a little bit. And we're going to be talking, I'm so excited. It's Fat Bird Week in Wisconsin. So we're going to talk about that after the 10:30 news. But
nice.
Something I wanted to talk with you about on the serious side, because I find this concerning. The Trump administration is talking about the endangered species list and suggesting that it should go extinct. And one of the things that I found in an article was essentially, if we destroy the habitat, does that really constitute harm to a species? And then I found another article about the importance of wetlands and how birds are really, we talk about birds being the canary in the coal mine. They literally are when it comes to our environment. Right.
Yeah, they are, as are many other species, like, I think a lot of times of amphibians, salamanders, frogs, toads, things like that, that are in direct contact with soil, water. And depending on the species, you know, they absorb water through their skin or air through their skin. And so they are super sensitive to both point source and non-point source pollutants. So if the environment that they are in is polluted or toxic in some way, that they are a lot of times the first to be affected, because they are so much in direct contact with that soil and the water and the air. And so they are also truly, you know, kind of the canary in the coal mine, so to speak. But yeah, the Endangered Species Act is, just for a little background for the listeners who, I'm sure everybody's heard, or most people have heard, of the Endangered Species Act. Unfortunately, it's become a bit of a polarizing federal piece of legislation, despite the fact of how beneficial it has been. But the Endangered Species Act was passed in 1973. It was passed as one of many different pieces of federal legislation that were aimed at improving the environment. So the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, Endangered Species Act, and a number of other acts were passed in the 1970s. And the 1970s has been termed the environmental decade because of the volume of federal and state legislation that was passed to protect the environment. So the Endangered Species Act, it protects, on the Endangered Species Act, it protects primarily wildlife and plants, but it also protects fish, snails, clams, aquatic vertebrate and invertebrate organisms as well. And I should say that while I totally disagree with what the Trump administration is doing right now in terms of attacking the Endangered Species Act, this is nothing new. And since the Endangered Species Act has been enacted in 1973, there have been many attacks to weaken the act. And as a matter of fact, there have been many relatively famous court cases that have risen to the Supreme Court level of the United States in an attempt to weaken the Endangered Species Act, especially the part of the act that impacts and has oversight over private lands. And so there's a lot of conflict between private lands, private land ownership, what that land owner wants to do on their land in terms of developing the land, maybe extracting resources off the land, and how that would impact negatively endangered species or species that are rare or declining in population. Again, being primarily focused on plants and wildlife, although there's a famous case about a snail darter in a river in Tennessee, for example, a couple decades ago. So just for background, this is nothing new. The Endangered Species Act has been under attack. But so do you want me to stop talking and answer your questions, or do you want me to keep going? Because it is, I know it's going to get a little dense for some people about going into great detail here. So let me know how much detail you want or you don't want.
Well, I think that's a pretty good foundation. I do want to just jump in and say I'm 65. I was only, you know, I was a teenager in the early 70s. But when I read things from the early, the Cuyahoga River in Ohio started on fire. It started on fire because it was
water
so
fire.
Because it was so polluted. Yep. So I think for people my age and certainly younger, we don't appreciate just how bad things were up until the 70s when they started going, gee, maybe poisoning our water and our air might be bad.
Yeah.
And I guess when you brought up the snails, and this is what I think gets a lot of the news attention. So I have my land that I want to build a mine on or whatever I want to do. And then someone comes up and says, there's a snail here that if you wreck their habitat, we're going to lose this snail. And is the snail really that important? Why should I have to worry about the snail? But it's all of a piece, David, isn't it? All of these things are part of our ecosystem and part of what keep us healthy.
Yeah, it is. There's some, I think, built-in tensions here because with the Endangered Species Act, nothing is resolved in terms of bringing populations that are endangered back to a sustainable level, whether you can remove them from the Endangered Species Act or you can reduce them their status from being endangered to threatened. And so threatened is better than endangered is. It's still the protector, the species needs protection, but it's not as in peril state as in an imperiled state as endangered status would be. But so there's a tension there where with the Endangered Species Act, things don't happen quickly. But a lot of times when we're trying to develop property or we're trying to make decisions on private property, we're trying to make decisions in a shorter, much shorter time frame. And so you have this tension between time scale for one thing, but you also have this tension between what's good for the private landowner. If it'd be an individual landowner, for example, if they want to develop their property to create a residential community of houses, or if they want to develop their property to create some commercial property. That benefits that individual landowner because they sell that land and they get, you know, some money for the sale of that land. But what they're trying to do with the Endangered Species Act is to balance, create some kind of a balance or a compromise between societal good, what's good for all of society or most of society, compared to what's good for a single individual landowner. And that also is inherently full of tension. And that's what a lot of these problems are where these problems are coming down is not so much that people are concerned about endangered species on public federal land, but it's primarily this tension between private land rights, the rights of a private landowner, and trying to balance those with the good for society.
If you're just joining us, David Drake is our guest. He's a wildlife specialist and a professor with the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. We're talking about the Endangered Species Act.
Something, David, and actually combined what you were both talking about, going back in 1973, you talk about the fact that this has been a very hot-button issue. In 1973, in my remembrance, even though I wasn't alive, but I know the history, both Republicans and Democrats were in Congress, and they passed this bill, and Richard Nixon signed this bill into law.
Yeah.
So the fact that it started in a bipartisan nature to help our country, I think, is important to remember. But also the other fact is because of this act, because of the work that people like you and your field have done for decades, they've also helped to get animals off of that list to protect them.
Yeah.
And to help grow their population. Is it a matter of people think, well, you know, this animal that was the gray wolf is fine now, so we can take them off the list and we can hunt them, and because there's plenty of them now. Is that the thinking, or is it just that they don't care?
Well, I think I'm going to probably not use the gray wolf as an example, because that is more of a political issue than it is a biological issue. Mm-hmm. Biologically, there are a sufficient number of wolves in the state of Wisconsin that can be sustainably harvested. Mm-hmm. So it's a political and it's a legal issue as to why that species is still on the endangered species list. But if we pick a species like the whooping crane, for example, which is a species that doesn't exist in Wisconsin as an experimental population, but there's an endangered population of whooping cranes in the United States. Those species are slow to recover, and there are a lot of valid criticisms against the Endangered Species Act. And there's not, if you look at the history of the Endangered Species Act since 1973, very few species have actually come off the Endangered Species Act because they're not recovered, simply because there's either insufficient resources to recover them, there's insufficient habitat existing that can be restored to recover them, and there's other issues going on with that. And so, but I think what the Endangered Species Act is trying to do is, obviously, they are trying to recover species to a non-endangered status, which is a very valid goal to mm-hmm. have. But they're also recognizing that there is this tension between private lands and the societal good, and they are building different mechanisms into the Endangered Species Act. So, for example, there's a program called the Safe Harbor Program with red-cockaded woodpeckers and other species. But for example, with red-cockaded woodpeckers, which is an endangered species of woodpecker, that they are allowing private landowners to harvest timber and to do some development on their land as long as they maintain a baseline of woodpeckers on that property prior to whatever exploitive or commercial development opportunity goes on. There's also the 4D rule. It's in section 4. D is in Delta, and that also is trying to provide flexibility to landowners so that they can harvest timber, for example, and still try to sustain and provide habitat to support the northern long-eared bat. But what's going on with the Trump proposal here is they are trying to remove this issue about habitat protection, and it's not just that you cannot harm, kill, harass, injure endangered species, and that all makes sense, and that's very, very clear cut. What they're actually attacking is this idea about you need to provide habitat protection for species, both in their current habitat, their current range, but also their historic range to some extent, and that's what they're attacking. And if you remove the protection for the habitat, you've essentially gutted any effort to protect species recovery.
We're going to continue our conversation with David Drake. Stay with us. If you have a question or a comment, 855-752-4842. Stay close. You're listening to Matt Nair on Air. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Good Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Caliente on the board. Coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can join us, you can call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. He is a wildlife specialist and professor with the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology at UW-Madison. David Drake is here, and we are talking about the Trump administration wanting to make some changes to the Endangered Species Act. I saw one Trump official essentially say because scientists have brought back dire wolves, which that's a whole nother conversation. Did they see Jurassic Park? I don't know. But we don't need it anymore. And before we went to the break, David, we were just talking about habitat, and it just seems so short-sighted to me. We have talked many times about butterflies and the decreasing population of butterflies. Birds, we have lost millions and millions of birds over the years. They play a critical role when we talk about pollinating and things like that. That's a really critical link that you can't just say, let's get rid of their habitat. It's all going to be fine. We don't need them anyway. As I said, it's all interconnected.
It is. I don't want to get too political on your show here, but I think the Trump administration has been pretty transparent about the fact that they are anti-science. They are trying to weaken or eliminate as many regulations as they possibly can for extractive mineral resource use, things like that. And they're doing it in a bunch of different ways. I mean, they're taking legal challenges, executive orders, they're firing federal scientists. And so I think that this is just another attempt to kind of weaken regulations so that the business industry can have an easier path to continuing to increase profits.
And that's my
opinion. So I'll just add on, that's my opinion. But
understood.
That's what
I'd say an expert opinion.
But and I guess I can understand the frustration to some point. If I am a landowner and I want to do something with my own land, why should I have to worry about the brown snail or whatever it is? But again, if you look long term, you have to look long term at the ramifications of this and essentially to make some accommodations for this.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem unreasonable. If we kill each other all off, there's not going to be anything to extract. No, there's not going to be anyone to do the extracting.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. But I think, I think this administration is coming at it from an economic perspective. And in economics, you are looking at a short-term gain more often than you are for a long-term gain. And I mean, you just think about economics generally. Other than maybe saving and starting a college account for our kids when they're born, as individuals, we do I think a very poor job of long-term economic planning. And I think that this is just an indication, another indication of that. I think there's also, with this administration, there's also an underlying foundation that they just do not believe in science in certain areas of science. And I think that this is an example where they don't think that it's necessary to protect these species or that we can recover them if we need to. We can use technology and genetic techniques and whatever, using the dire wolf as an example, that we can recover these species. But if you can recover the species, but they don't have anywhere to live in terms of the habitat that supports them, you have essentially cut off your nose to spite your face.
I think that they believe in, as we've seen with their work on the National Weather Service, they believe in science when the science tells them that they're right.
Yeah.
And then it's not science anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we've gotten to, again, I don't want to, we're ranging into some topics that
we don't have to go there.
Yeah,
we don't have to go there.
Be careful about. But
birds
are great. But as a society right now, as an American society, we are struggling to agree on what facts are.
Yeah.
And that is a dangerous place to be.
In the minute and a half that we have left, David, what can people do in their own backyards to help support our birds and other creatures that we need? What can we do?
Yeah, so let me just say about this Endangered Species Act really quick. So by federal law, they have to open this rule, this proposed rule to remove the habitat protection, they have to open that to public comment. So if you are, as a individual member of society, if you are interested in protecting the Endangered Species Act and not allowing this rule to be removed, one of the things you can do is go and make a public comment. And I think you have until May 19th to do that, if I remember the date correctly. But go make a public comment, contact your congressional representatives, donate to nonprofit organizations that are helping to protect the environment, things like that. Individually in your own yard, make sure you don't let your cats outside. That is an easy one and a big one.
Keep your cats in the house, yep. I'm telling you.
Yep, it's one of the best things you can do, both for the cat and for the wildlife.
Yep.
Make sure that you are aware ecologically about what your footprint is and where you live in terms of, the actions, the impacts you can have on the environment, both locally and globally. And I think that is a really good starting point.
David Drake is with UW Madison. He's a wildlife specialist and a professor with the Department of Forest and Wildlife Ecology. We love having you on the show, David. Thank you so very much. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Jane. Always good talking to you.
Take care. News is coming up next. And then when we return, it's Fat Bird Week in Wisconsin. We're going to learn all about it. That's all coming up. Stay close. This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. Good morning and welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Calvin Ader on the board coming to you from our studio here at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us. Call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Shout out to Sherry on the text line in Horicon. She's just checking in, saying hello. Hello, Sherry. Thank you so much,
Sherry,
for being with us. And just a heads up, too, we got baseball coming up later on today. Crew at the White Sox games. Our broadcast, rather, starts at 6:05 tonight. You do have to listen to actual terrestrial radio. Mm-hmm. If you want to catch the game, you can listen on WRCE in Richland Center, WISS in Oshkosh, WRJN here in Racine and Kenosha, WCQM in Park Falls near Butternut. And WBZH AM in Hayward, our newest Milwaukee Brewers affiliate. The crew at the Sox, they beat them last night. Our broadcast starts at 6:05. Right now, we are being joined by Emma Schatz. She is the Digital Communications Coordinator with the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. Good morning, Emma. Thank you so much for joining us. I saw this headline in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Keith Ulig with the byline from the Green Bay Press Gazette. It says, Wisconsin Fat Bird Week celebrates Junco in the Trunco and other chunky feathered friends. I laughed so hard, I almost had coffee coming out of my nose.
I think that's one of our better names for the contestants. It's so good.
It's so funny. So tell us about Fat Bird Week in Wisconsin. I can't believe I have never heard of this before. I know of Fat Bear Week. They do that in Alaska.
Yes.
That's a big thing.
Yep.
They do Fat Bear Week.
It is a big thing.
And so when did Fat Bird Week in Wisconsin get going?
So last year was our first time doing it. So this is only our second year. And we were inspired by Fat Bear Week. Excellent. So we actually reached out to the comms team at Katmai National Park, and we got their blessing, their permission to take our own space. So what better way to do it with birds in Wisconsin?
That is very fitting. That is so funny. Well, tell us, first of all, Emma, what is the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin? What is it that you do?
Yes. Yeah, so we are an environmental nonprofit, and our mission is to protect Wisconsin's lands, waters, and wildlife. And so we provide funding, and we lead partnerships and connect all people with nature. And so our work spans all across the state.
And so what, how does Fat Bird Week work? What do we need to do to be involved in Fat Bird Week?
So every day, starting this Friday, May 2nd to May 9th, the public gets to vote daily for their favorite fat bird. And so we have 8 incredible, chunky, very round, very fluffy contestants. And so they compete in different matchups. So it's a single elimination bracket style tournament. And so the first round of voting opens this Friday at 9 a.m. You can just go to our website, wisconservation.org. And the first round of voting will be open for 48 hours. And then the second round opens at 9 a.m. on Sunday. And that will remain open for 24 hours. And then all of the following rounds will open daily at 9 a.m. You'll have 24 hours to vote until the final round on Friday. And then we'll announce the winner on Monday, May 12th.
I'm very excited.
Yes, you are very, very, excited. Very, very excited. Really quick, just for our more, you know, is there a website on DraftKings I can find out odds on who's got what? And, you know, we're a very bracket heavy society now.
Yes.
So I have to imagine there's someone looking at this going, I got 3-1 on the well-fed yellow warbler.
Yeah. So something new we're doing this year is we are encouraging like either workplaces or friend groups or families, if you wanted to do kind of like a March Madness pay-to-play situation, we have a bracket that you can download on our webpage. So it's wisconservation.org/fatbirdweek. And so you can, you know, donate some money to play with your friends or your family and submit your predictions. So,
And really, I'm assuming, Emma, that this is just to raise awareness and get people interested and excited about all the nature that we're surrounded with here in Wisconsin.
Exactly. Yeah. So the main point is to celebrate our native bird species, but also learn how to help them. So we are partnering with SOS Save Our Songbirds, which is another bird conservation organization, to share ways that we can help protect these birds, because, you know, in Wisconsin alone, there's over 60 bird species that are listed as either endangered, threatened, or have declining populations. And there are small changes that we can make at home to make a difference. And so we're trying to, you know, bring the community together in a fun and engaging way, but then also have that educational aspect of sharing ways that we can help protect them.
And what are some things that we can do, Emma? What should we be doing in our own backyards?
Yeah, so SOS Save Our Songbirds has 3 main ways to help protect Wisconsin's birds, and that's planting native plants. So whether you have a big garden or just a balcony, there are a bunch of different plant species that you can do. Also preventing window collisions. That's a really big issue. There's, I think, let's see, I know I have a stat. Yeah, this was shocking to me, but up to 3.5 billion birds are killed every year in the U.S. after flying into glass. And so, you know, whether that's fixing a window in your home that tends to be a problem for birds, or on a larger scale, working like with your office or a larger building to try and prevent those window collisions. There's a lot of ways to reduce those deaths, and resources on sossaveoursongbirds.org. And then the third one is drinking bird-friendly coffee. So not a lot of people are aware that most coffee is grown in ways that destroy migratory songbird habitats. And so there are a couple brands that we SOS recommends you can switch to help protect migratory bird habitat as well.
That came up. Okay, so that's both shocking and of course I'm not shocked at all. And I went to my computer and typed in bird. And before I got the word friendly out, coffee was the first thing that populated on Google.
Wow.
There are a bunch of different brands that are, quote, are considered bird friendly blends.
If you are just joining us, Emma Schatz is our guest and we're talking about Fat Bird Week, baby. Going on right now. Emma is with the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin. And we're just going to go over some of the contestants.
I feel like we should have gotten some like game show music.
Right? Yeah, and then if this were the draft and then they would fly out onto the stage with fireworks and all that stuff. So the contestants for the Fat Bird Week are the round yellow rumped warbler, the well-fed yellow warbler, the rotund, ruby-throated hummingbird, the pudgy pine warbler, the dark-eyed junco in the trunco, which just kills me, the necklace northern cardinal, enormous eastern bluebird, and the spherical white-throated sparrow. You guys must have had so much fun coming up with those, Emma. I wish I had been in on that meeting.
It was a lot of fun, and I have to give credit to my supervisor, Shelly, for coming up with Junko and the Trunko.
So good.
That's just
I want a t-shirt with that just because it's hilarious.
And the way it's looking at us in the picture just looks so mad.
Shizu on the live stream says, are these chunky or are they, oh, Lord, he's coming big. How big are we talking about?
That's a good question. And there's a lot to consider when, you know, choosing who you want to vote for each round, because in the world of fat birds, you know, fat can mean how round are they? Mm-hmm. Is there a neck? But also how fluffy are they? Because for the birds that don't migrate, they're not necessarily gaining fat, but they're fluffing up their feathers in the winter to stay warm.
Sure.
And so we consider that like a classification of fatness. How fluffy are they? Because it makes them look a lot rounder. So there's a lot of things to consider.
Lots of things involved in this. This is not just a fly-by-night exercise.
God. Emma, I just have one question for you. You are, of course, you know, you work for this group and you've been talking about it. You've been working on the brackets and qualifying the contestants. Who do you have on your bracket? Who do you think is going to be the winner?
I don't know if I want to say. I don't want to influence people's decision.
I think that's fair. I think you should keep it to yourself, Emma.
I think there's some strong contenders, but I'm really interested to see what happens in the earlier rounds, because some of the matchups, I think it'll be harder to decide between the two than others. So, and that could just, you know, change the whole game.
The tension surrounding this, the excitement, the betting, it's just crazy. 855.
I lost my house on the fat bird contest.
855-752-4842. Ollie from the Northwoods is on the line. Good morning, Ollie. Thanks for joining us.
No, this sounds like a wonderful thing to do, this fat bird contest. But I just have a question. Are they concerned about the bird flu and people feeding? Should you feed? Should you not feed? And bird baths and things.
That's a great question, Ollie. Emma, I don't know if you can address that at all, but can we be feeding our birds? Because I've got water in my bird baths now.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. I don't have a lot of information on that, so I don't want to, you know.
We'll do a different follow-up.
Yeah.
We'll do a different follow-up on that. But
I'm just going to say it. I think it's going to be the dark-eyed Junco and the Trunco up against the rotund ruby-throated hummingbird. That's going to be the final matchup.
And what leads you to that?
Well, first of all, the dark-eyed Junco and the Trunco, the name alone is going to gather a lot of votes. That's just good marketing, good branding.
It
right
is.
There.
That's true.
And the rotund ruby-throated hummingbird just looks like it's ready for victory. I mean, look at that thing. It's just, it will not take second place.
Are you seeing a lot of lobbying dollars coming in with this, Emma? You know, the pro Junco and the Trunco group is putting
a lot of,
is Big Bird involved? Yes.
And you know, the name is such a good factor to consider too. And I know a lot of people have been commenting about that spherical white-throated sparrow too. And it's really? All about the angles. Really? Yeah.
I mean,
but, you know, I think the ruby-throated hummingbird is just so impressive because they are such tiny birds, but they actually pack on a lot of fat and like for their migration. They, in one day, they have to have like the human equivalent of 150,000 calories.
Yeah, it's insane.
During migration.
Yeah, it's insane. Oh, it's insane how far they fly.
You also have to consider that, like, they are so tiny, but then they eat so much.
Lots involved in this. We're going to put all of the links in our show notes so we can all get involved. Let's make this a thing. I would love to see this turn into a really, really big thing. Emma Schatz has been our guest with the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin talking about Fat Bird Week, baby. Again, check our show notes at civicmedia.us. Emma, thank you so very much. It's been a delight.
So much.
Have a great day. Stay with us. We're going to wrap it up with This Shouldn't Be a Thing, Angry Bird Edition.
Mm-hmm.
This is Matt Nair on air on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to Matt Nair on Air. Jane Matt Nair, Greg Bach, and Young Calvin on the board. Coming to you from our studio at Radio Park in Racine. You can always join us, call or text at 855-752-4842. Leave a comment if you're watching on the live stream on Facebook, YouTube, and what used to be Twitter. Our thanks again to Emma Schatz with the Natural Resources Foundation of Wisconsin talking about Fat Bird Week. Voting gets underway on Friday.
We're going to have her back.
We are going to have her back. Troy from Mount Horeb texted in and said, can we have her back for the results? Because voting here in Wisconsin for Wisconsin Fat Bird Week starts this Friday.
Yes, it does.
We'll get all the contact information in our show notes so you can take part and read this article from Keith Ulig. Wisconsin Fat Bird Week celebrates Junco and the Trunco and other chonky feathered friends.
Yes.
Fat Bird Week in Wisconsin getting underway on Friday. Tomorrow, we have a busy show as well. Jim Santel from Amicus, a law review. He's our friend and colleague here at Civic Media. We're going to talk to Jim tomorrow morning after the 9:30 news. Brittany Merlot will be here for a little weather and wine in hour number two. And then J.R. Ratcliffe.
Yes.
Talk all things sports. Milwaukee Journal Sentinel sports guru J.R. Ratcliffe will be here about 10:33. Unfortunately, Bucks ended it last night.
Oh, man.
And it was like the ugliest way to go out. It was not.
I was on Twitter and I just started to see the tweets pour. And I'm like, what happened? And I just read, I'm like, oh, this isn't good.
Yeah, it was not the ideal ending. But anyway, that's all coming up tomorrow. So I hope you can join us. Right now, it's 11:54, Calvin. That means it's time for
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
If you find a thing you think should not be, send it into Greg and me at janesays@civicmedia.us. Kind of going along with our bird theme of the hour.
It's a bird hour.
It is a bird hour. Calvin found this one from The Drive. Beverly Braga with the byline. Headline reads, one pesky woodpecker has terrorized 25 cars and counting in Massachusetts town. In the midst of mating season, the pileated pest, likely mistaking his reflection for a rival, and attacking windows and mirrors to protect his territory.
Birds are dumb.
Well, kind of. They're vicious, too.
Oh, yeah.
A seaside Massachusetts town being overwhelmed by vehicular vandalism. At least 24 vehicles have been attacked since March. The suspect, you know this person had a ball writing this.
Yes.
The suspect described as wearing a black and white while sporting a red hat. He's about 2 feathery feet tall. He's a bird.
And?
A woodpecker in heat.
In heat. I think I told you, Jay, when I used to work for the city of Racine, we had a new, a seagull who gave birth to some baby seagulls. And anyone who, and it was 5 floors up.
Oh, my.
But anybody walking on the ground floor on the outside would get dive bombed. They are so aggressive when they feel threatened. Oh, my gosh. We had to put a sign up that said, be aware of aggressive seagulls.
Oh, man. Yep. Rockport, Massachusetts has been having problems with this woodpecker that's destroying car mirrors.
Jeez.
Resident Janelle Falleraro told people she caught the bird in the act. She shared her findings in a neighborhood Facebook group. Likely one of the first to realize who was doing this. Yeah. They didn't know if it was a person just walking around smashing mirrors. There's been a vandal breaking vehicle mirrors described as 18 to 24 inches tall, wearing black and white with a red hat.
Oh, it's a 3-year-old running around?
Neighbors reacted, saying they too found their vehicle mirrors broken. It is now a viral neighborhood thing. We realize essentially that this bird is the one who's doing it. The woodpecker is about the size of a crow, which is pretty big.
Dang.
Pileated woodpecker found year-round throughout Canada and the eastern half of the U.S. This time of year is mating season, so all birds, not just these woodpeckers, are getting into the mood. If you're seeing the reflection, if they're seeing a reflection of themselves, they don't understand they're seeing themselves. Yeah. They think it's a competitor. That's... Woodpecker's mating season lasts until June. Falleraro says her neighbors have all been getting creative in protecting their mirrors from simply covering them with a scarf or something or a bag, anything to protect their mirrors from the pileated woodpecker.
Wow. Just so, they're not dumb, but come on. I mean, my goodness.
Well, it's the mirror thing is not.
And when you're in heat, too, I'm sure the bird's just like, I'm crazy.
I don't care. Yeah. Just get out of my room.
Yeah.
So that wraps up today's episode of
This Shouldn't Be a Thing.
Thank you, Greg and Calvin and all of our engineers. Without you, nothing works. And thank you most of all for calling and for texting and for listening. It really does mean the world. I hope you find some joy today and you have the chance to share it. News coming up next, followed by Tom Hartman, 11 to 2, Todd Alba, 2 to 4, Maggie Dawn coming up 4 to 6, and then Pete Schwabba in his regular slot, 6 to 8 p.m. with Nightlight. Stay with us. News is next on the Civic Media Radio Network. We'll see you tomorrow.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.